My name's Hannah Georges.
You see, now you don't know what to do after that because you're not a band, right? So you can't go, my name's Hannah and I play guitar, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I was going to say I play music and I'm a singer-songwriter.
Okay, you know what? That's not even on here. But let's do it because singer-songwriter, are you comfy with that one?
I am comfy with that one. I feel like it's a good way to it's just what I do naturally, so.
But you're not strumming a guitar at the ground round playing old Dylan songs.
I'm not, but I am I don't know. I do strum a guitar and write songs at the core of it.
Yeah, that's true. Core of It should be a good name for a club. Where'd you play last night? I played the core of it. We've got your British Columbia. We've got your Ontario. We've got NYC shows. We've got Walmart commercials. We've got first album in 2010. Have we covered it all?
Are we done now?
We're done.
We're done.
That's all that's left, right?
You covered it all.
Yeah. Walmart, huh? Big first sink from Walmart?
It happened.
Big bucks?
It happened. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
And were you at the time? See, we can get away with this down the road because the license is done. Were you a Walmart shopper at the time?
I'm not going to lie. I've shopped there before. I've gotten some gum there.
Gum at the Walmart. But your CDs are probably, I wonder. If you go, you should go to the Walmart now and see like how much your CD costs or how much the album. Well, they wouldn't carry the album.
I don't know. I haven't gone to Walmart and seen that yet. I think back on the first record, I was there for sure, but I haven't checked since then.
Being an unsettled human being, as opposed to everybody else who's really settled, people have made an entire interview out of your unsettledness. But I mean, when you really think about it, what percentage of the world is actually settled? How many people do you know in your life that are settled?
I don't know. I feel like maybe I have some friends that would think they're settled, but there's no, that I don't think life ever settles itself, really, but it's all a state of mind.
Has any of this anxiety, see, we're gonna do the end of the interview at the front, but the whole reason we do what we do is to get it out. And, you know, the catharsis factor in this record on a scale of 1 to 10 is a 64.
I would say it's more than that.
So how's that worked for you?
It's good. I feel like, you know, it's just kind of what, you know, comes naturally when I write. I have to, like, be inspired by something that I'm emotionally connected to, whether it's, if it's about me or not.
You're not like, I'm going to write the fantasy song about the motorcycle gang girl, are you?
I don't think so. I should try, but...
Yeah. Your thing.
It's not my thing.
Not listening to the lyrics.
No.
These are pop songs, and I love pop songs because pop stands for popular.
Well, I'm on your page. I'm a big fan of pop music, so yeah. It's what I've been listening to since I was a kid, and I guess that's, you know, how I write. But I'm also very much like the thing that draws me to a song is a catchy melody and lyrics. So
this is something that hit me personally because I grew up with a dad that was ill. That really hits you in a completely different way growing up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. My dad was sick for a really long time. And I wasn't a kid. I was a teenager when I found out that my dad was sick. And it hit me in a crazy way. But I, over the years, when you know that you're... a family member's sick and you just kind of build up this kind of wall or strength to deal with it and cope with it in the way that you can, and you also aren't, you know, preparing yourself for stuff.
But isn't it hard, I mean, to be close in some ways because you want to be close, but then you're always kind of like, wow, what if this is the last thing I say?
Yeah, I definitely struggled with that with my dad. I struggled that with being close with him, but I don't know. If that were happening to me now and my dad was in the situation he was here now, I feel like I'm a completely different person and would have dealt with it in a different way. But I was really young when that was all happening, or 18 years old when my dad first started getting sick. So yeah, it's a crazy thing.
But the song about your mom and the anticipation and the you know, the belief system. I mean, she's well, but the level of preparation is quite phenomenal.
Yeah, it's, well, I think after losing one family member, I got even, I don't know, I had a different relationship with my mom growing up, and now our relationship, we're very, very close. She's like one of my best friends, and I think that brought my mom, losing my dad brought my mom and I closer, and I wrote a song about, you know, thinking of what would I do if I lost her? It's kind of an overwhelming thought.
And then there's the video with that song, which I watched again recently, like very recently. And a lot of people probably are walking away with that visual. So tell me a little bit about where that came to be and where that started and where it ended up.
Well, I found this director based out of Toronto. His name's Sammy Raywall. And I was at an art show, and he had a piece up. It was just like a projection of this visual that just kind of blew my mind, and I just found him and reached out to him, and we sat together and talked about ideas and visuals that we wanted to use for this video, and he came, it's a lot is his vision. He was like, I propose this shower scene, I want you to put a t-shirt over your face and see what happens, like just go for it. And then I started doing stuff.
Now your relationship with, and of course we have to go here because the album is your grandma, right? Making it to that age, what a trooper, number one. Now I know in fairly recent interviews she hadn't really heard the record yet. Has she heard it yet?
She's heard it now, and I actually recently I've been hanging out with her quite a bit over the last year, because I the last 12 years I've been living on the west coast of Canada, far away from my family, and I moved back to Toronto, one, because I work a lot, I have a lot of people that I work with musically in Toronto, and then two, because I've been away from my family. So I've been hanging out with my grandma, and she's 98, which is crazy. And then anyways, yes, I was sitting with her, and I came over with a record just for her, and my mom and I were sitting with her, and my mom said to her, you know, this album is dead, like it's for you, or Hannah's titled it after you. And she went, what? And started crying, and that just like, that really hit me.
What an incredible thing, because you did it in many ways as a catharsis and a tribute, but then this is a first though for you, right?
It's first, yeah. I don't know. I wasn't expecting her to do that. It just like, it hit me. Like my grandma's, she's old and she doesn't say a lot. She's still like with it if you get her talking and stuff. But when she reacted like that, it hit me pretty hard.
So this is a good time to talk about sounds and the producer, Mr. Holy F. You wanted those sounds again. I mean, there's obviously lots of new sounds, and we'll talk about those. But there is a thing that the two of you do together, and it's pretty big, and it's pretty layered, and it fills the room, so to speak. So you wanted that, right? You went to him for that, did you not?
I did, and I've just developed this relationship with him where we work well together, and I trust him, and I like the soundscapes and the things that he finds that I can't do in a way. He's a gear nerd, and he's obsessed with the synths. And
you think? I couldn't tell. Really?
He's pretty obsessed with them. So that something, and I just knew before I went into the writing process and making the record, I just had a conversation with him being like, anyway, I just want you to be involved in some capacity. And then it just kind of went that direction where I was like, okay, let's do this.
But in prep for that, you wrote on keys.
I did. I demoed everything on keys in my apartment that I lived in Vancouver. And really wanted to make a conscious effort of that, because I know that instrument inside out. Whereas I'll pick up a guitar and I'll just play it, but I don't really know half the time what I'm doing. It's just like I've learned it on my own. I was raised and trained playing piano for years, so I really wanted to to work with that. And I also have a synth at home that I can like, I can find interesting sounds. And I found this really cool saxophone patch that like inspired some more saxophone on the record. And I've gotten better at using my Logic program. So I was experimenting more with my demos and going beyond what I've done in the past.
No matter how hard you try in life, someone's going to make you feel like that word that's in one of your songs. Mm-hmm. So how do you let that go? Performing, perhaps?
I'm a very happy person, and people that know me well, like, I don't take life that seriously. I
just don't want people to worry about you too much.
No, I put it, I take a lot in, and I hold a lot.
2011, literally right there, there was this picture. Do you recognize the guy on the right?
I do.
So, but it's freaking me out. Let's talk about time. That was 2011 when The Stand was out. Tell me about his involvement in the record, because you had other people involved, and when I was reading that, I was like, cool, now I get it.
Yeah, I met Ryan back in 2010 in Vancouver.
Wow, right before we met.
Yeah. Yep, and I was originally a fan of his music, and I asked him to work with me on my first record. So he worked with me on my first record, and since then we've become really close friends. And I will just go to him, you know, after I finished a bunch of songs on my last record, I just spent a night hanging out with him, drinking wine, and just playing him my songs and asking him, you know, if I had a question about something or if I needed to, like, I don't know, get a piece assurance on something. He'd be like, as you probably know, he's very confident and decisive guy and will give you his honest opinion. So I like that about him. And I was in the thick of recording my record in Toronto, and I don't know, I felt like I was so far into the woods and confused with some things. And so I flew back to Vancouver and I just hung out with Ryan for a day. And some questions that I had about the record, I was like, do you think this chorus should not come so quickly, or do you think this? And he just give me advice, or just give me his opinion.
But do you ever wake up in the morning and like, have you done like a goal setting thing? I mean, I actually have talked to artists that literally have, you know, mission statements and all of that. Do you ever think about where you are? Is it not relevant to you because you're making a living at doing this?
I do think about that, of course. I have big goals and plans and dreams, and I'm constantly thinking about it. There's music and business is on my mind all the time. Yeah, it's on my mind all the time. Yeah. And I think that's, you just, yeah.
So how do you, as a creative person, how do you deal with it?
This business, yeah, I've just like learned so much, and I've been doing it now for 6 years, and all the time I'm learning that I have to like have thick skin. I have to be business minded and blah, blah, blah. It's my career. It's my life. And how do I push it forward in the ways that I need to? And are these people that I'm surrounding myself the right people? Are they doing their job and all that stuff? It's like, it's hard work.
Business.
It's a business.
I know.
You just want to like be an artist, man. I know I do, but you can't do it.
You can't. You've got to be everything, you know? You've got to be working twice as hard as you've ever worked. I don't know.
So what I've done is I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you pick a pile of songs in between, all right now, off the cuff. It's not a playlist.